Okay, good morning. Chodesh Tov. I think Zmira forgot to mention the most important thing about credits for me is that I'm married to her. That's the most important thing. And on that note, I guess I'd like to thank her for everything that she does, certainly at home for our family, and also for all of you here in the OU putting together these Rosh Chodesh seminars and everything else she does here. And I can tell you that it's not just that when she's in the OU that she spends time working on these things. She's always thinking about and busy with, in addition to the rest of our family, how to make more Torah learning and more Torah and activities for all of you here. Even when she's at home, we spend plenty of time talking about all the things that are going on here. So we should all give her a big thank you and a big round of applause also. Okay. So our topic for this shiur is the halachot of mishloach manot and matanot le'evyonim. Some of you might think, well, this is very simple and it's obvious, and I just give some food and give some money and we're done with it. So that might be true, but there are also some halachot and some parameters that go along with these very, very special mitzvot, and we'll end off maybe at the end with 2 minutes about some of the important machshava points about it. But for now, we'll begin with some of the halachic points. We're going to go through quite a few different halachic questions and answers when it comes to the halachot of both mishloach manot and matanot le'evyonim. You should have both two pages. One is an outline in English, and one is a source sheet in Hebrew. Of course, not all the sources are on here, but I took a selection of the things that we'll discuss. Hopefully, you see all of them. The outline is basically the different topics with the questions without the answers. The answers you can feel free to fill in based on what we discuss here, or feel free to ask me afterwards for elaboration, or you know where to find me if you have other follow-up questions after I leave. You can feel free to ask my wife. Okay, in addition to that, anybody who has questions in the middle, feel free to ask. Okay, I guess I don't know if normally take questions, but I'm happy to take questions. Just either raise your hand or make some sort of motion that I know that you're interested in commenting, and I'll be happy to very briefly address any additional questions or follow-up questions. Okay, so we'll start with Mishloach Manot, and then we'll move over to Matanot Le'evyonim. What is the source of Mishloach Manot? Mishloach Manot, we know, means to give nice portions of something, which we'll discuss in a minute what that something is. The Megillah in Esther says, Mishloach Manot Ish Tereyehu, that the Jews, after the victory in the Purim story, gave portions to each other. And certainly part of the idea of Purim is to celebrate not just by ourselves, but together with the rest of the community. And the Gemara, based on this, says, if you look at source number one, the Gemara explains, Tani Rav Yosef taught, U'mishloach manot ish l'reyehu, that's the pasuk we just mentioned, that was the custom of the Jews, shtei manot l'ish achad. So that teaches us that we have a halachic obligation, a mitzvah, on Purim for all generations to give two portions to one person, meaning you fulfill your mitzvah of mishloach manot by giving two portions of, fill in the blank, we'll get to that in a second, to simply one person, and that's it. Everything you do afterwards is very nice, but it's not required. So here we'll skip just for a minute to source number four. If you look at the first two lines in source number four, this is the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch codifies, we say in Torah and learning language, we say paskins, that word based on Yiddish. The paskins, he gives the ruling, Chayav lishloach lachaver shtei manot basar, o shalmine ochlim, which we'll talk about in just a minute, that a person has an obligation to send to another person, to his friend or to anybody else, two portions of meat or other food. Again, we'll come back to that. Shenamar mishloach manot ish l'reyehu, as it says in the pasuk, shtei manot l'ish achad, two portions for one person. And then he adds in, v'chol amar belishloach l'reyim mishubach, and anybody who adds to that, who increases the amount that he gives, hareza mishubach, he's praiseworthy. So are you obligated to give more than one mishloach manot of two portions to one person? Are you obligated? The answer is no. Do we all do it? Most of us, right? I don't have to take a show of hands, but most of us do. So that's wonderful. It's great. We'll come back to in a second how that plays into Matanot Le'evyonim. But in theory, it's great as long as you don't drive yourself crazy and you don't get no sleep on Purim that you can't hear the Megillah. I don't think Mishloach Manot something gets into this. But if you spend so much time at night preparing your Mishloach Manot that you're too tired or you're too distracted to listen to the Megillah reading, that's a problem. Okay, Megillah reading is much more important than the extra, more than the one Mishloach Menot that you're obligated. So it's great to do, but it's not obligatory. Okay, so that's point number one. What other specific parameters or reasons given for Mishloach Menot other than the fact that we're celebrating the miracle and that we want to do it with the community? So there's two, maybe more than two, but at least two different directions or angles that some of the commentaries give here about Mishloach Menot. If you look at sources 2 and 3, you'll see here the Trumat HaDeshen, who's one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Yisrael Isserlin. So he says the following. He says, why do we give Mishloach Menot specifically in this form? Take a look in source 2. B'nei Adam HaSholchim L'Chavereihem B'Purim Chalukim Mesadirim Chiyai Gavna. People that give to their friends on Purim, let's say they give clothing or sheets or things like that. Yotzim Yudei Mishloach Menot Olav. So he was asked, can you fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Menot? Can you give them a book? Can you give, you know, a nice set of plates? Maybe plates might be different, but let's assume for now it's the same thing. Tshuva yira de'en yotzim b'hen. You cannot fulfill your obligation. Why? D'nira tam de mishloach manot hu k'day she'he l'chol echad dai v'savik l'kai masuda k'dina. That the idea of mishloach manot is in order to be able to fulfill which other mitzvah on Purim? The suda. Okay, meaning that the whole direction of mishloach manot within the idea, of course, of, you know, celebrating and giving other people, you know, the community, is to give things that will be helpful that you can use, theoretically at least, for your Purim Suda. And he quotes from the Gemara, which we won't read inside, but in the last line there of source number 2, he mentions in the Gemara that they actually, two of the Amoraim in the Gemara actually used to exchange meals for the Purim Suda, meaning each one would send the other their Purim meal, and that, the Gemara says, they would fulfill their obligation also of Mishloach Manot. So the Trumat HaDeshen says, based on that, that the idea of Mishloach Manot is mainly to provide food which could be, doesn't have to be used for the Purim Suda, but food that could be used, at least theoretically, for the Purim Suda. As opposed to source number 3, the Manot HaLevi, which is written by Rav Shlomo Alkabetz. Anybody remember who he is? What else he did that was very famous? That's right, exactly, okay? He was the author of Lecha Dodi, we say every Friday night. He's buried in the old cemetery in Tzfat. I've been to his kever many times, and hopefully some of you have as well. A very very special person. So he wrote a not-so-well-known sefer on Megillat Esther, a commentary on Megillat Esther called the Manot HaLevi. He was a Levi. So it's very long, very interesting. So I just took out 1.5 lines here where he gives a slightly different explanation for Mishloach Manot, Vinyana Manot, Kel Yedei Mireut V'Achva Nikaluvet Nitzalu. Through the fact that the Jewish people united together as one, they bonded, and they had Achva, unity, they gathered together, and that's how they were saved, or part of how they were saved in the miracle. Lo b'peru levavot, not through splitting of hearts, meaning not through the fact that each one was scattered. We say in the beginning of the Megillah, mefuzar mefarad bein ha'amim, Haman says that the Jewish people are scattered among the nations. And we see here that through the miracle of how they won is that they came together. They were actually unified, maybe not all in the same place, but unified in ideas. Ufmakom yom tov gazer matanot lev yonim, and instead of a yom tov, so I left out a couple lines there, but basically he says that instead of having a real yom tov like Pesach or Sukkot, instead, we have special mitzvot like Mishloach Manot and Matanot Lev Yonim. This idea of unity, of coming together. So that idea of Mishloach Manot is a little bit different than the Trumat HaDeshen. It's more based on the idea of creating unity, creating community, bonding with somebody else, rather than specifically or only looking at the food element. So according to the Manot Levi, some want to say that if you sent your friends, let's say, a nice book or a nice gift of flowers or something like that, would you fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot according to the Manot HaLevi? The answer seems to be yes. So, normally speaking, we saw before the Shulchan Aruch in Source 4, in terms of this point, he rules like the Trumat HaDeshen. He says, Chayav lishloach lachavero shtei manot basar shel minei ochlim. You have to send food. However, let's say if you're in a situation where you can't send food, a really good example. Again, I wouldn't do this as your main Mishloach Manot, but this is very common. Let's say you want to send Mishloach Manot to somebody who lives very far away. It doesn't live in your community, could be in this country, could be in a different country. Today, there are all these packages and services and things you can do to even do that. But let's say, theoretically, you want to send them, you know, a nice something else. That for whatever reason, maybe is easier than food. Some people today want to send a nice email with some Divrei Torah. So does that count according to the Manot HaLevi? The answer is probably. If you send some very nice Divrei Torah or some ideas to somebody else, at least according to the Manot HaLevi, that would count for Mishloach Manot. Again, ideally, we follow the Shulchan Aruch that you should send food, but theoretically, at least as an addition, and maybe if you're stuck, even as your primary, there is what to base it on here. And certainly, even if we don't follow it directly, the idea of the manot, of mishloach manot, is certainly also an idea that's discussed by others. The idea that mishloach manot, even if you're supposed to send food, in addition to the idea of the food being something which could be used for the Purim Suda, certainly it's also something which is supposed to create the unity among different people. And this, of course, is an important message for us today, which we'll just come back to, I guess, at the end, the last 2 minutes. Okay, let's go on, and then if you have questions, you can ask. That was basically the basics of Mishloach Manot. Let's talk a little bit more about the details of Mishloach Manot now. What type of food do you have to send? So as we saw in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, Shtei Manot Basar, two portions of meat, O Shel Mine Ochlim, or types of foods. The question is, what exactly is included? Which types of foods are included? So what would be your first suggestion? What kind of foods would you say are definitely included, other than meat? Hamantashen, okay, great. That's the question, okay? That's actually part of the question. Do you need to send a food like a meal food, like meat or bread or a sandwich or something? Or can you send, let's say, hamantashen, which is actually on the better side because hamantashen is grain, it's filling. Can you send cheesecake? Okay, that's also, it's a dessert, but it's also, you know, it's pretty filling, right? If you eat cheesecake, you might not have an appetite afterwards for your meal, right? At least if you have too much, maybe. okay, so let's say water. If you look at the outline here, it's in the outline, okay? Drinks and candies and snacks, okay? Kids and some adults love to send candies or snacks, what they call in Hebrew chatifim, right? Or mamtakim, okay? Sweets, you know, a bag of Bamba or Doritos, some people here know what those things are, right? Not just my kids who send those things, but... Can you fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot of sending two portions to a friend with those items as well? So what do you think? Yes. Why? Okay, it could add to their meal either as a dessert or as a side dish. I don't know. There are the four main food groups, right? I think it's chocolate and pizza and candy. I don't know. I don't remember what they are, but you have to remind me. But there are four main food groups that are not regular foods, right? Ask your children or grandchildren. Okay, and then ask the dentist afterwards what they had to clean out. Any case, so there's a big discussion in the poskim whether you're allowed to fulfill your obligation based on, you know, with these foods. So as many of you said, the answer of most poskim, the Birkei Yosef and a number of other poskim and most of the modern poskim say, yes, you can fulfill your obligation with all of these. These are all called mine ochlim. They're not meat, but they're all called kinds of foods. The idea is supposed to be that you, according to many of these poskim, that you have to send, and by the way, it's in the, it doesn't say it directly, but in the Mishnah Brura, if you look in source 5, so he mentions in the third section of the Mishnah Brura source 5, it's letter Chaf. Okay, look at the different letters in parentheses, that's what we call Sif Katan. So Mishnah Brura and Sif Katan, Chaf says, Mine Ochlin, Velo begadim ushar dvarim. Okay, you can't send other things like we saw in the Trumat Hadeshen. You can't send clothing and things like that. But for food, v'hu adin mashke, the shaper dummy. Drinks are okay. D'shtia bichlal achila, because we have a halachic principle that drinks are included in eating. Drinks are the same thing. So bottled water or soda or other drinks, again, depending on your feeling of sweet drinks or, you know, you can send, certainly grape juice and wine is good, even if you don't want to send sweet drinks or it was too expensive because they didn't bring down the prices yet, the taxes. But whatever it is, that's fine. Or if you have one food and one drink, that's fine. Okay? Can you have two drinks? All right. Mine ochlim, two types of foods. Drinks are included. So one could argue that there's no reason if you can include drinks, why can't you have two drinks? Send a bottle of wine or grape juice and a bottle of water or a soda or something. But some say maybe not, because in the Gemara, the story they gave is that drinks usually accompany food. You don't usually just have a drink by itself. So if it's going to be part of your meal, or at least something that could have been part of your meal, maybe you have to send at least one food and one drink. So that ends up being a machloket among the poskim. Many poskim do say two drinks is fine. But again, because Mishloach Manot is not a hard mitzvah to fulfill, so, and I think the custom in general is usually to send at least one food and one drink. Great question. I knew somebody was going to ask that question. Before we answer that question, somebody else have another comment? Yeah. Right. Okay, very good. So the questions go together. So it does not seem, even though this is very widely thought, in the sources that I've seen and the poskim that talk about this, it does not seem like anybody says they have to be two separate brachot. It seems like the same bracha is totally fine, meaning it's very nice to make extra brachot and sudat amein. That's beautiful. But in terms of the obligation of Mishloach Manot, you don't have to decide your obligation of mishloach manot based on how many bracha you're sending. People have enough to eat on Purim, they'll find other ways to make the bracha. What is a question, though, is whether you have to send two types of food. Meaning, can you send, let's say you want to send meat, or I guess meat is not as common, but let's say, you know, two types of hamantashen, or, you know, even the same thing. Let's say you sent, two portions of the same thing. Would that be okay, or do you have to send two separate types of things? So that's a little bit of a machloket. Whether that's okay or not. It's not a hard thing to do. So definitely to send two separate things is good. Strictly speaking, it seems like, again, you know, it's not clear that you have to do that. Okay, too many ochlin might mean just two portions, as mishloach manot means portions. So it could be the same portion twice is also okay. Yeah. So minei ochlim includes fruit also. I didn't mention fruit just because, for no good reason. Fruit is certainly fine. Vegetables are certainly fine. Meaning, if you include anything that would have served, you know, as part of a meal, certainly fine. Fruit is often dessert. Vegetables are often part of a meal. Anything like that would seem to be fine. The most important thing when it comes to this is what many poskim say is the following. We'll get to it actually in just a second. So about that it's got to be something chashuv, a significant portion. That we'll come back to in just a minute. But that's probably the most important part of this point of which food you send, which I'll go back to in a second. That's fine also. Right. So again, the idea, it doesn't seem to be that you have to give something that actually would be eaten at your Purim Suda. That's in theory like the we call the parameters for what could be included. But breakfast food would seem to be fine also, meaning as long as it's a meal that could be eaten as a Purim Suda. And you should know that there are some people that actually have their breakfast as their Purim Suda. So that's perfectly fine to have breakfast food. Meaning even those that say you can't have candy, I think they would agree that breakfast food is fine even if you give it at 11 o'clock in the morning, because in theory it qualifies as something that could potentially be used for a Purim Suda, even if most people are not going to eat those foods in the afternoon. The same way that, let's say you give somebody something which is chalavi. Okay, you give him a nice dairy cheesecake or a dairy, you know, lasagna or pasta or something like that, even if it's a good food. But the person happened to have just had a nice piece of chicken or, you know, something else, which is bisari. Did you fulfill your obligation? The answer is yes. Why? Because, again, even though technically speaking right now or maybe even a few hours from now, he can't eat that. But in theory, it's something which you could fulfill your mitzvah for. You could eat. It's definitely could be part of the meal, even if technically right now it's not practically applicable. You still definitely fulfill your obligation according to everybody, not only according to the Menot Levi, not only according to those that say you have to have other things. According to everybody, that would be fine. And again, as we said, according to most opinions, candy is fine. And okay. Let's go on. And then if you have more questions, you can ask. Okay, so we're in the outline now in number 3. Other details of the food. So here's another interesting question. Must it already be prepared or ready to eat? For example, can you give food that has to be cooked first? Okay, again, I don't know how common this is today. I think many people know this question already. But in theory, could you give something which has to be baked in the oven? Okay, a non-baked dish of bread or kugel or who knows what. You know, anything like that you have to prepare. So if you look here at the Mishnah Berurah, in source number 5, so the very continuation of what we read before in the letter Chaf, it's the third section of those sections with the letters at the beginning. So right after we left off there, where he says, right in the middle of the second line, it says, Uva'inan shiye min ochel ha-mavushal v'lo basar chai. Okay, it needs to be something which is cooked and not raw. Okay, meaning you can't send raw food and assume that the person will make it themselves. Why? Because the whole idea of mishloach manot is that it has to be something they can use right away for their meal. It shouldn't be something that has to take them, you know, an hour to cook. To mishloach manot haraui miyad la'achila mashma. Because the idea of mishloach manot ish l'reyehu sounds like the idea has got to be something that you can eat right away. However, then he says, v'yesh omrim yud alaf yesh omrim tekevan shu shachud v'ra'i litpashil miyad shari. Okay, if it's, let's say you sent him an animal, okay, I don't know how much this happens today. Let's say you went to the local butcher, or you had it in your freezer, you had a raw chicken, okay? Or you went to the butcher and got him a fresh chicken. Okay, wonderful, it's not frozen, it's fresh, even better. But it's not cooked. Okay, and now most of us probably would be a little embarrassed to send that as mishloach manot. But let's say, whatever reason, you know the person you're sending it to really likes to bake their own food. Or they don't trust your kashrus, let's say. Let's say they don't want to rely on your kashrus. I'm sure nobody here knows anything like that, but let's say that would be a situation. So can you send something which is raw? So the answer is, again, according to the first opinion and the main opinion, no. According to the Yesh Omrim, some say the answer is yes. As long as you could cook it right away, you could cook it, and within the hour, it's ready. So again, l'charchila, we generally, it's not hard to do, we generally try to follow the first opinion, which is that you should give things that are ready, and that's what's generally done. The question that I have here, which some of you might ask, is let's say you want to send what we call in Hebrew, manachama, right? What do they call it in English? Yeah, in America we call it the tradition soups, right? Here they don't sell tradition, but we have lots of tradition here, not the soups, right? Plenty of tradition in Israel, but anything like that, which is something which you just take, you know, hot water, you pour it in, and it's ready. But it wasn't ready when you got it. So the question is, does that count? What do you think? Okay, coffee, same thing. You have to put it in. You got to heat up the hot water and put it in. Does that count as being ready-made or not? What do you think? You think yes? Right. So just because people give it doesn't mean that it's right. But if your logic is such that that counts as being immediate because all you have to do is go to your kitchen, heat up some hot water, and 2 minutes you pour it in, maybe. Everybody agree or don't agree? Okay, so I actually did not see this case discussed in the books that I looked at least. I didn't see the case discussed, so all I can tell you here is my own logic. And my own logic was I was inclined to agree with you. I think that when they're talking about something which needs to be prepared, they mean something which takes effort. Okay, just taking, and let's put it this way. If you needed effort to do it, even if it took only a few minutes, but it was, you know, a task which was not simple, then it could be that that would not be included. However, here all we have to do is, you know, flick a switch for your hot water kettle or your urn, wait 2 minutes and just pour in the hot water. It's quite simple. It doesn't take very long at all. My inclination would be that that would be fine. That if you wanted to send something like that, that would be fine as one of the two portions. But again, I have yet to see it. I didn't look at every single source on this topic. These are the kind of things that you often find online more than in the books. So if somebody wants to look online at some point and let me know what you find, or if I have a chance, I'll try to take a look online and see. But my inclination is that there's definitely room to allow that if you choose to send that for whatever reason. Okay, next, 3B and C. Okay, 3C we already spoke about. 3B, how much must each portion be? Okay, meaning how large does the portion have to be? So again, drinks, if you're talking about a nice bottle of drink, you shouldn't have a problem. In terms of food, is there a measurement that's required? So here, there are a few different measurements that are mentioned. I'll just tell you them briefly. One is 3 kibetzas. A kibetza is roughly about 50 grams or so. 3 of those is roughly 150, 160 grams for like a main dish. Second opinion is a kizayit, which is about 28 grams or so. You know, one of those nice little muffins or things like that they bring. 150 grams is more than that. That's already a significant portion of a, you know, I don't know, like a big, I don't know how many pieces, let's say two or three pieces of bread probably, 3 pieces of bread probably. The third opinion is probably the better one. This is the one that most posts can follow. The Aruch HaShulchan and some of the modern posts I saw quoted in this saying this, is that it's got to be something which is called something davar yafer or davar chashuv, meaning that it's something that normally you wouldn't be embarrassed to give to somebody else, something which qualifies as a significant portion that if you give it, it's a davar mechubad, meaning it's something which is respectable, it's an honor to give it, which basically means if you're giving real food, then, you know, a nice piece of kugel, a nice sandwich, some people have the custom to give like a deli sandwich. If you're giving, you know, hamantaschen or cakes or things like that, again, not a tiny little piece, but a nice size portion, which again is often not necessarily 3 kibetzas, but it's at least usually more than 1 kizayit. It's gotta be something that if you got it, or if you give it to somebody else, is a respectable amount, okay? That's basically, again, it's not an exact thing, but it's how it looks, you know? And for the person that you're giving it to also, meaning for somebody who's more, you know, certain people, maybe a respectable amount would be more than other people. So you have to think carefully of who you're giving it to. As long as it would be respectable for them and respectable for you, then according to all the opinions, you're basically covered. So again, it depends. Let's say it like this. If you're giving us a store-bought cake, which, by the way, we'll talk about this in a minute, but if we don't get to it, you often, when you give to one person, you often also mean that it's going to be for the whole family as well. If you're giving to one person, that's part of the family. So you could really look at that either way, and in some cases that's actually better, because let's say the person that you give it to is not there, but the rest of their family is there. do you still fulfill the mitzvah? The answer is yes, because basically it's not just for the person, it's for their whole family. They're gone. They're not coming back for another couple hours, let's say, maybe even after Purim, or I don't know. But somebody else took it for you. That one of the reasons why that counts is because you have in mind also in the back of your mind that even if the person themselves is not there, then you can still count it for the rest of the family. So what I would say is that if you give a store-bought cake, then I think that's certainly fine. If you give a piece of cake, if you take a piece of cake from a store-bought cake, I'm not sure whether that counts as a davar mechubad. If it's homemade and it's a nice piece of homemade cake, that already I think maybe would count, you know, with a nice piece of thing of frosting on the top or something. That already certainly could be considered, you know, a davar mechubad. But again, that's open to debate. That you really can think about on your own what's considered to be a davar mechubad. What would be normal to accept or to receive or to give when it comes to something like that. Okay, let's move on here. What time is it? We have about 17 minutes or so. All right, one or two more questions about Mishloach Manah, then we'll move on to Lev Yonim. In terms of who you give it to, who's obligated? Look at number four now. We'll go a little bit out of order here. We'll look at B first and four. Who's obligated to give it, and who could, in terms of who you give it to, what's, you know, are there special things you have to be aware of in terms of the person you give it to? So who's obligated here? So in 4B, one question is whether women are obligated in Mishloach Manot. I think we all know the answer to that. The answer is yes. If you look at source 4, the last section of source number 4, the third paragraph of source 4, this is the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, but this is accepted by Sfardim as well. Isha chayavet matonot levyonim mishloach manot. Women are obligated to give matonot levyonim and mishloach manot. Ke'ish, just like a man. And then he goes to the whole thing that women should give to women and men should give to men, which we won't go into right now. But certainly, again, women often give to women and men often give to men. And even if not, even if the man and the husband answers the door, that's fine, because again, your intention is to give it to the woman, or the idea that, again, as we said before, it goes to the whole family. So usually you're covered in terms of that. The question they ask is, let's say that, you know, your husband is also giving. Again, I think Mishloach Manot usually is more the women that give than the men in terms of who actually does the preparation and the giving. But let's say your husband gives Mishloach Manot and not you. Does that count? Do you have to have both people giving? And the answer is, it's actually a machloket, whether each one has to give separately or they can give together. Again, it's not hard to give separately, so it's nice to do that each one of you gives a separate one, or that one of you gives two Mishloach Manot, meaning two portions to two separate people, and then you say, well, the two that I'm giving, you know, are one is for you and one is for me, or something like that. That's definitely it's definitely a good thing to do. Is it required? Not clear if it's required, but definitely good if that's an option. What is important to know is that if you have other people in your house other than you and your husband, let's say if you have older kids that are not married yet that live at home, do they have to give their own Mishloach Manot? And the answer is probably yes. Even if they basically live with you and they eat your food and you pay for them, again, or the same thing is true for your grandchildren or your kids and grandchildren, whatever the case is, the halacha is generally that most poskim say today that they should give their own, as long as they're over bar mitzvah, and especially if they have their own money. But even if they don't, it's ideal to find some way that they can give their own Mishloach Manot, which is, again, usually what happens anyway, at least in my house and most of my kids' friends. And most of them are going out of their way to make a point of giving, you know, 25 different Mishloach Manot to every single friend. So I'm just trying to get, you know, two or three that look good and that are nice. They're trying to go all over the place. And you know, so usually that's not a problem. But again, just in terms of the halacha, be aware that that is something which they are required to. Let's do 4C and 4D very quickly. Can you send to an avel? So somebody who's in mourning, that's a question whether you can send to somebody who's in mourning. The answer is not on the sheet here, but elsewhere the Ramah says that you're actually not supposed to send to an avel. An avel is obligated to give Mishloach Manot themselves. If they're in Shloshim or the 12 months, certainly, they're obligated to give. To receive is a question whether they can receive, because there's a question of whether you're supposed to greet an avel in a normal way. So the Ramah says on the books that you're not supposed to give an avel Mishloach Manot. However, today, because not everybody follows the rules about how to greet avelim that are not, again, not in Shiva. Now we're talking about within 30 days of the Shloshim or the 12 years for a parent, the 12 months for a parent. Not everybody follows this rule that you can't greet that person for the entire year. So in terms of that, many poskim say that if you want to give them Mishloach Manot also, that's fine. But here also you can add in the point we mentioned before, that often when you give Mishloach Manot to one person, if they have more of a family, which again, not always the case, but if they have other people at home, either a husband or, you know, or kids or whatever that live with them, so that also counts. Even if they're an aveluk, but you give it to everybody. So you give it, they open the door, you give it to them, and they know it's for them. But at the same time, other people in the house might also eat it. So that's also, you know, another way out of that question, to avoid all the questions, all the problems, is to give it to them with, you know, in mind that the rest of their family can use it as well. Yeah. Okay, great question. So it's actually a discussion. in the first line of the Mishnah Berurah in the Sif Katan Yud Chet in source 5, it says the binyan sio nistapeki mevi batzmo amanot velo ayidei shliach iyote. Okay, it's actually a question. The question is whether maybe you have to give it with somebody else. Okay, because as mishloach manot ishtereihu, mishloach means to send. You need to bring it yourself. He says kevan dichtiv, since it says mishloach manot neima dva'in and dafka ayidei shlichut, maybe you have to send it with a messenger. So he doesn't answer the question. The conclusion of most opinions is that you don't need to. You can send it yourself. But certainly if you wanted to send it with somebody else, there's definitely nothing wrong with that. Okay, certainly if you wanted to send it with your kids, as long as you know that it got there. Okay, you have to make sure they're reliable. Right? If it said might have gotten lost somewhere on the way, you didn't hear from them afterwards, then you might want to check up to see if it actually got to where it was supposed to go. But are you allowed to send? Definitely you're allowed to. Anyway, there's a question here, maybe you have to, but everybody, you know, definitely allowed to. And if you don't want to, most people say you don't need to either, bottom line. Okay, last, we're going to have to rush here just to get to Matanot Lev Yonim. Very quickly, the first question is fascinating, 4A. Can you send food to which the person is allergic? Okay, somebody's a celiac, they can't eat gluten, they're lactose intolerant, they can't have dairy. Can you send somebody like that a food which they're not going to eat? Good question. So it's not clear what the answer is. Some posts from Rav Mordechai Eliyahu wrote about this, he wasn't sure. On the other hand, again, some people say, well, because you're not sending it only to them, maybe it's to their family. Number two, maybe you don't have to look at exactly what each person is going to eat. Because if that was true, then let's say the person, you know, you give them something and they don't like that food, but you didn't realize. They don't happen to like, they won't eat it. They won't like it. Did you not fulfill your obligation? So the answer is no. Usually we say, and this is the bottom line talk of many poskim, that Rav Rimon, if you know who he is, he's a nice savior on Purim from Alon Shvut. So many of them say that that you can fulfill your obligation with sending food that the person is allergic to, because, again, they might give it to their family, or Chazal just made rules that anything which potentially could be eaten is good enough. Same question, by the way, for things and people that don't trust your kashrut, if that would actually happen. Same question, and in general, that also, generally, poskim are makel that that's fine. However, of course, I think this is common sense, that you should be sensitive to their needs if it's somebody that you know will not eat certain kinds of food because they're allergic or because they refuse or whatever reason. Certainly out of sensitivity, it's better not to send them that food. It's better to send them something that they're going to eat. But if you didn't realize, or whatever the case is, you know, most poskim say that would be fine. And again, especially when you're sending, let's say you send 5 or 10 mishloach manot, so only one has to be halachically, you know, valid. If you send somebody else something, certainly that's okay. Okay, we're going to have to skip here, source number 5 for now. What I'll just summarize for number 5, I think this many of us know already, you have to send it on Purim day, not the day before, and not Purim night, but on Purim day. That's the rule. If you, again, ideally, you should send, even if you send it the night before and it gets to them the next day, that's also not good. Really, ideally, you should send it that day and it should get there that day. That's the ideal. If that didn't happen, you know, maybe there's room to be lenient if they get it. Yeah. So that's a question. It's not according to everybody. Some posts can say that's okay, and others say that doesn't count. Why? Because if the idea of Mishloach Manot is more about, you know, bonding or about bringing unity and bringing things together. So it has to be that you gave it and they received it on the same day, which is Purim. So I would say like this, meaning to give them also as an additional Mishloach Manot, absolutely. But to give it your main, like your only Mishloach Manot that you're being fulfilling your mitzvah with, only in that way, I'm not sure if I would recommend it if possible. If for whatever reason that's the only option, so then there is what to rely on. There are definitely some people that hold that that's okay. But because it's a machloket, again, it's not hard to add in somebody else. You know, it's better to try to get them the same day. Yeah, well, this has a lot of questions. Okay. Not in your, in living in your house, probably not. Somebody else that's in your family that lives next door, absolutely. Probably not. I mean, if there's somebody that, you know, that's based on, you know, that lives with you, then probably not. If it's a visitor, on the other hand, meaning if it's a guest who's staying for a couple of weeks, that already perhaps yes. But somebody who lives in your house that eats with you all the time, you know, then I would say probably not. Yeah. Probably not. No, it's great to do it, but as your primary mitzvah of mishloach manot, if you're giving only one, that's all you do without any other mishloach manot, that would not count. The same thing for communal mishloach manot. If you order communal mishloach manot that are given to like a whole group of people, but it's not done in a way which fulfills the obligation, it's done the day before or anything like that, then that also would not be yotze. All you have to do is give one, you know, two portions to one person on Purim itself. Not so hard. Yeah. Right. So again, that's wonderful. But again, as your primary mishloach manot, you wouldn't be yotze that way. You'd have to do it on Purim itself. As additional, as extra, absolutely. But again, not as the only one mishloach manot that you're giving on Purim itself. That would not work. And I think that's known. Meaning, I think the people that do that realize that. If they don't, then you should tell them. That's also fine. Yeah, totally fine. Okay, let's move on. Well, we're not going to get to the rest of these points here right now, unfortunately. I want to talk about Matana Levinim for a couple minutes. But I'll just mention the 5C, before we turn the page, 5C. There's a big machloket whether you can give Mishloach Manot to somebody who's not doing your Purim. If you live in Yerushalayim, let's say, and you give to your kids in Beit Shemesh, that's a big machloket whether that counts or not. It's better not to use that as your only Mishloach Manot. Okay? As extra, absolutely. But ideally, because some opinions hold it's got to be that day, for you celebrate Purim that day and the recipient celebrates Purim that day. So ideally, you should have at least one that you give to a person that's celebrating Purim on the day that you give. Okay. Matanot Le'Avyonim. Let's move on. So the big question for Matanot Le'Avyonim is how much do you need to give and how do you give it? So if you look at the source sheet here, the other side of the source sheet, in source number 7, okay, this is just the Gemara, Matanot Le'Avyonim, Shtei Matanot L'Shnei B'nei Adam. Okay, so Matanot is plural, Avyonim is plural. So we learn from here, as opposed to Mishloach Manot, which is two portions to one person, here it's two portions to two people, meaning that each person gets one portion. So what did I write? I'm sorry. Correct. I apologize. That was a typo. You're absolutely right. That was actually not correct. Okay. I wasn't thinking when I wrote that. I must have been half asleep. But I'll correct that right now. Okay. The idea is two portions to two people, meaning that each person gets one portion. Okay. Each poor person gets one portion. The question is, how much money is that? What does that mean? So it's actually not so clear, believe it or not. Again, we all want to give more, hopefully, than we're able to, but let's say you want to know what your minimum is to make sure that it gets done. So if you look at sources 8 and 9, so it's a bit of machloket here, the Ritva quoted also in the Mishnah Berurah, in source 8 says, Mistabra de matot levyonim, hainu afilu bevet prutot, deshava pruta chashiva matana aval lo pefachot. Even what we call a pruta is the smallest coin that you can have, that's good enough for matot levyonim. Okay, meaning minimal is just a minimal amount of the smallest coin. Again, for two people, so two pruto, not one, but two pruto. So the question is, how much is two pruto today? It would probably be like, yeah, maybe, is a question of how much it actually is. Let's say at maximum, maybe it's two or three shekel. Okay, maybe even less than that, but at maximum, that would be two or three shekel. However, in source 9, the Shari Tshuva on the Shulchan Aruch, he quotes a whole bunch of sources here. If you look at he quotes a few sources and he says, Shimnotain Maot, Tarach Shitain Shiur, Shikna Gimel Beitzim Ochel. You got to give three eggs worth of food, which is basically, today is about 150 grams. Okay? 150 grams is, let's say, a couple pieces of bread. Okay? A very large sandwich might be three Beitzim. So that's a question also, that's also an opinion which is mentioned. And the other opinion is mentioned by a lot of the modern poskim, which is that it's got to be a nice food, but a pashut food, meaning a nice simple portion of food that you can eat, that amount, meaning the value of a food that you could eat on Purim as part of your suda. Not an exact amount, but a simple, normal food that you can eat as your main suda. So I'll tell you what's usually mentioned, at least modern practical poskim, what they usually say. I saw this, I think, in the name of the Shevet Halevi or Vosner, but it's talked about by a lot of people. How much would it cost to go out to the store and down the street here and get, let's say, a nice meal of pizza or falafel for somebody? So two pieces of pizza, or maybe even one, half a falafel, maybe a whole falafel. Let's take half a falafel for now. That's also probably a good meal. How much does that cost? So when I gave the shiur, let's say 6-7 years ago or 10 years ago, that might have been, I don't know, 8 or 9 shekel, 10 shekel. Now, I don't know. It's up to 15, right? Okay, so let's say that to make sure that you get this done, the best thing to do is, let's say, maximum 20 shekel. That would probably be what would be necessary. 25 at the most if you want to get two pieces of pizza. Each piece is 12 or 13 shekel now, depending on where you live and how expensive the pizza is. Let's say 25 shekel. If you want to be sure you're a yotze, 25 shekel per person is probably definitely good enough, which means 50 shekel altogether. But certainly, even if you have, 12 or 13 shekel, maybe even 10, but certainly for a half a falafel, 12, 13 shekel, that would probably do it. So even 25, 30 shekel is probably good enough. If you want to be sure, then 50 shekel for two people, 50 shekel, 25 plus 25, that would certainly do it. And many people give a lot more than that, but that would be the minimum. Yeah. 200? I didn't say that yet. Oh, 2 or 3 shekels. That's the, according to the first opinion, right. The first opinion that says that it's got to be a pruta and no more than that, So a pruta maximum today would be maybe two prutas, would be two or three shekel, maybe even less than that. Yeah, that's the minimum. But many poskim say, at least ideally, if you're able to at least to give, you know, this range of, you know, a small meal, which would be anywhere between 12 and 25 shekel per person, which comes out to anywhere between 25 to 50 shekel. Again, as a minimum, but again, many people give so much more than that, that hopefully that's doable. But if you're stuck, yeah. That works very nicely if it goes to a person that's paying for something that day. Okay. That's a question. If it's not for that day, it's not clear that it doesn't work, but it's not clear that it does work. Meaning it's a bit of a question. So if you have to discuss with them, you know, to do if there's somebody comes that they know is in that situation and they're going to come on Purim and pay for them, then that definitely could work. But if it's going to be something that comes the next day, so that's a question. There are some postmen that allow that also. Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. If you do it from before, that might work. That might work also. You have to verify the details. Okay, and that has to be done with somebody who's local, either the local Rav or the local Makolet, to verify the details to make sure that it works. If you give money on Purim and it gets distributed the next day, so again, that's not clear that works. Okay, some people say that it works, but it's not clear that it works. So ideally, the best thing to do is give to the people, even if you give the day before, but it gets distributed on Purim, and even if it's by credit card, over the phone, you just want to make sure that you give to a gabbai or to an organization, a stuck organization, that tells you they're giving out Matanot Le'ev Yonim of Purim on that day, on the day of your Purim. Okay, that's the way, that ideal way to do it. It could be by credit card, it could be by cash or whatever else, or any other suggestion, but it should be done in a way that's given that day. If it's given the next day, again, some say that's no good, some say it is good. It's better to avoid that. Say that again? Right, so that's also a question. Again, it's a discussion. Bottom line, the best thing to do is, again, when you call, let's say, the stuck organizations on the phone and you tell them what you want to do, they'll usually ask you, is it for the 14th day of Purim or the 15th day of Purim? Which Purim are you doing? And that's why. So ideally, it's better to be that day. If you can't and you only get the other day, there's still what to rely on. Okay, we're going to have to finish up here. The questions we didn't get to, as you can see, who's considered to be poor? The answer is basically anybody who doesn't make enough money to live normally in today's times. That's the quick answer. Dmei Purim, we don't have time to get into right now, but people that walk on the street and ask for money. So there's an idea on Purim that you're not supposed to think about who you give to. Matanot Le'ev Yonim really should give to somebody that needs it, but you know, a little shekel, a couple shekels here and there to people that you don't know if they need it or not. You know, so maybe that's fine. There were stories in Telstone that I was told once that some Arabs dressed up as Jews in Telstone on Purim when asking for money. Matanot Le'ev Yonim. Okay. Anyway, we'll have to stop with that. It's in general, husbands and wives should both give. Number four, ideally, it should be for both. But again, there are some that say otherwise. But it's better for both of them to give. Okay. Let's finish up. This is a concluding point here. The Mishnah Berurah says in source 12 in the very back there, if you're faced with a question of more mishloach menorah, more matanot le'ev yonim, which one do you do? So even though many people give tons of mishloach menorah and spend a lot of money on it, the clear answer in the sources is that, as he says here, zeo midina aval met mutav larbot matanot le'ev yonim milarbot besudato u'mishloach menorah. Okay, even though it's only two portions to two poor people, strictly speaking, the best thing to do is to give more matanot le'ev yonim and less suda and less mishloach menorah to other people. Okay. Okay. The best simcha you can have is to gladden the heart of the poor and the widows and the orphans, just like the Shechina, as he says. That's the way to do it. And we'll conclude with that. We have to end, right? Time is up, right? Okay. That the idea, as we said before, of Purim is not just about celebrating and getting drunk or whoever gets drunk and whatever else. It's also about community, about bonding with Klal Yisrael. Again, today's times, especially with what's going on in the news these days, you know, with other aspects of the, you know, Israeli society, it's so important to create achdut among people that you are friends with, people that you're not friends with, people that don't look like you, don't act like you, that are Jewish. It's important to create achdut, and one of the ways that we do that here is through mishloach manot and matanot le'ev yonim. It's most important matanot le'ev yonim, but mishloach manot as well, to give to other people that need, and to create a feeling of Klal Yisrael that the Jewish people care for one another. And the way that we celebrate our victories is not to go out there and shoot guns, is not to go out there and get drunk. It's to help the rest of the people and make sure that everybody's provided for. So on that note, I wish you a Chodesh Tov, and we should all merit to have a very joyous Purim and be able to give to other people. And